Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 98-year-old Bob McAvoy of Clovis, California, originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He just turned 98 this week, but according to the Navy, he's been that age for a while. We'll get to that. Bob served aboard three different ships during World War II, but his story might have been quite a bit different if he had offered a different answer to a question he was posed on his first ship, the cruiser USS San Diego.
They asked me, do you want to go back to San Diego to gunnery school? And I said, do I want to go back? I was out in the war zone. Hell yes, I want to go back to San Diego and go to school. And so I did. My father had a place out in the valley, North Hollywood. They dropped me off there to visit my dad, who lived next door to neighborhood family who had a daughter, and that's how I happened to meet her. She was my first wife. She was a tall girl, and we hit it off, and we got married. Graduated from school, and sent to Tacoma, Washington, I think it was, to be assigned to a troop transport, USS Napa, and it's a brand new ship, and I'm another, what do I call them?
Plank owner?
Mind reader. I'm probably going to write. It's on a brand new ship. And so, but I was a gunner's mate. And so they had a 40 millimeter mount on the stern of the ship. I was in charge of that. And so it's a new ship. So we get off, outfitted off. And all once we're in the hot harbor and we're going south, we come down to Pendleton, and we get down in that area and take some Marines on, a section of the 4th Marines. So we load up with them. We go out and join some other ships and go down to Hawaii. New ship, new crew, new Marines, and it's a troop transport, but they have those boats aboard that you have to launch off and they can load the Marines on or put on a small tank or something in them. So everybody's new in it. Load and unload till we get the darn thing right. Then we head to the South Pacific. Where else? That's where the battles are. These Marines are being trained for Iwo Jima. That's where the next stop was. Holy macaroni. That was something else. I mean, talking about being scared. How I admire those Marines. We go in there, let them land, and I'm watching all of this because those are the ones who are being active, and I'm standing by, I'm 40 millimeter mount on the stern of the ship. So I'm just mesmerized is what it is. I am taking all this in. The battle is going on the shore. We're spitting a hauler now from the shore of the small harbor. I didn't even remember how many ships there were with it, but they're all troop transports. So I go in and I'm sitting there and watching the battle. And the thing that sticks in my mind is they had these things that flare up all of a sudden. You know, they're thrown in and it, pew, and these Marines all over the place. And these things are starving. I said, oh, Lord, those poor guys, they've got to take that. I'm just mesmerized. I talk about war. I'm just sitting there, you know, and these guys are, oh, I don't know where they get the, you know what, to go in there like that. I'm just so afraid for the guys. But anyway, when the end of the day comes, the ships up anchor and go out of the harbor because we're that close to Japan and the Japanese bombers. We don't want to be in there anchored when they come in. So we get up in the day and go out and circle around the island there until the next morning. So on the fourth day, we're out and we're coming back in. I had the midnight watch, it's 12 to 4 when we're cruising. And it was a little bit after 4 that I jumped on off the gun turret and get in my bunk. The next thing I know, bam! Holy macaroni, I'm in the second bunk up There are three bunks, and I'm in the middle. And I wake up, and I'm standing next to on the deck next to my bunk. That thing, it jarred the ship. I said, holy mackerel, we're torpedoed. I turned around, and I look up to the port side, and there's a hunk of iron sticking through the night. I thought, man, it's a torpedo that didn't go off. I can't swim. And my life jacket is up on my gun turret where I left at 4 o'clock. And I first thing I think about, where's my life jacket? I'm on the port side below decks. And when that thing happens and I'm standing there and I said, I got to get to my life jacket right now. So I got bizzling across to the starboard side of the ship to go up. There's a tubby guy right in front of me. And I can rather than say, I'm up there pushing this butt up. And I said, get going, man. I got to get up to my life jacket. And I get up there and turn around. There's this other ship. But it wasn't a ship. It was a ship's bow that was stuck through there. I thought it was a torpedo. But then I found out when I got up there, this other ship. And he had backed off and then come alongside again to keep us in balance so we don't take a lot of crap till we get everything closed down below deck and get watertight and we could float by ourselves. So they stand by us that long. But I'll never forget how I had to get that life jacket because I thought we were going to sink. And then we get up and that guy on the ship on the other ship, even though they were responsible for it, they just forgot to turn when the other ships weren't coming in and just pow, just like that. Scared the liver out of me.
Yeah, I read it put a pretty big hole in your hull. And how far was that from you, where the penetration happened?
I was below deck, and it came into our compartment.
So you're within feet of where bow of the other ship penetrated your hull.
It was about maybe from here out to the flowers out there.
So maybe 20, 30 feet, something like that?
Yeah, it wasn't too. It was big. There's a lot of metal showing it. I don't know why I thought it was I didn't concentrate on it that much. My mind was getting over this way and up on this to get my life jacket. That's number one. Yeah. Number two is what happened. And I thought it was a torpedo, you know, to come in like that, come through the side of the ship. But I didn't realize it was a bow of another ship until I got up on top, up on the main deck, and I could see it. So then I had to say, well, it wasn't a torpedo. Whew, thank heavens. But then we might sink them, except that other ship came alongside us. Yeah. David, it was smart of them to do that.
It's still a pretty close call, and there's another story here. You know, there's an expression, burying the lead, which means, you know, you didn't tell someone a very important detail. So we haven't shared with the listeners a very important detail here. Here you've been out to sea all this time, all those battles with the San Diego, now you're on the Napa, and you didn't know how to swim?
Yeah. The San Diego went through the war without a scratch and after the war, you know, they put stringers up on the ship for the number of years or so that it's in the battle. San Diego had the longest one. They went through the whole war and through all the fighting. Not a scratch. It's just miraculous, it seems. There is a memorial in San Diego next to the aircraft carrier, Midway, I guess, off the stern of it over here on the shore. There is a memorial to the San Diego. My name on it, just picture of the ships on it. And down below, it's drawn the route of the San Diego that went through the whole war. And boy, I don't know how many miles it was on the thing, but that thing goes like all over. You look at it, wow, a lot of miles on that thing.
Well, and I'm wondering if there's more of a story here about you not being able to swim, because I've talked to guys who they had to have other people take their swim test for them to get through training. So because they abbreviated your training, they never made you prove that you could swim?
The immediate need was for men get out on the ships. I was only 2 weeks learning how to march. That's the only thing they tried us. And how to keep our gear clean.
I'm not trying to make too much of it, but I'm just wondering if not knowing how to swim ever caused you anxiety when you're out there in all these battles. Even, I mean, you mentioned seeing the guys jump off the Hornet. They have to survive in the water for who knows how long. Was that ever something that weighed on you or concerned you, the fact that you couldn't swim?
Yes, but I didn't worry about it. I mean, what is, what is. And there's too much stuff to do. No, it didn't bother me. I tried one time. I did a little dog paddle, I think, on the side, but I was quite close to them. I could grab something to hold on to. But no, it never did bother me aboard ship. Not at all. Because I knew that's why the life jacket is so important to me. That's why I always offset that fear, you know. Yeah, I forgot to tell you. My third ship was USS Oberon, and it's a supply ship. What happened was that when I married, I told you about North Hollywood, she came up to visit and stayed a week or two while she became pregnant. During that week or two that she was up there, when she let me know about it, of course it was in a letter, I was at sea, we came back into Tacoma. All the leave we could get was a weekend, so I came down, and at that time, all the military used to hitchhike during the war because everybody would take a man in uniform and pick him. So that's what they did. They got on the road and hitchhiked on. I stayed there too late, and I missed the ship. So there I am, and I said, oh, man, I better get the heck out of here and get back and do something. And I turned myself into shore patrol. And I went to the captain's mast. I forgot what my sentence was. But anyway, he sent me down to this the brig where they make wooden pallets. And that's what I was doing, making wooden pallets in there. I'm maybe there a month. And suddenly it come to me and say, Bob, if you want to get a dishonorable discharge, you can get it now. Or if you want a discharge under honorable conditions, you put a year in more. He said, I'll take it. So that's what happens to me. I get sent out to another ship, and this is the Oberon, and it's a supply ship. And this is right towards the end of the war. I think the war had ended in Europe by then. It was 45, I guess, is it? So I signed up for another year in the Navy. They put me on the Oberon, and it's a supply ship. And here we are, we're going to have to go to China. I'm not a gunner's mate anymore. I'm a seaman. Second class when I get out of the brig. I got a year in the service, and so I got a stripe on my arm showing that I've 4 years in. So captain of the ship gave me the job of running the captain's boat. I'm a gunner's mate. They chased me. But I have 4 years, so they say I must know something about it. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And then I did, and scared the life out of me because I'd never done one. I never even looked at, I've looked at them. But to run one, control the speed and the stop and run it in reverse and slow down and get to the dock and not crash into the side of the ship. I don't know where I got the nerve to do that, honest to Pete. But we got assigned to it, man. So you got to do it. So I did it. And I surprised myself.
I want to ask you about, you know, you told us that story about getting a weekend pass and going down to meet your daughter for the first time because you found out in a letter that she had been born, but you've never met her. And this is what leads to you getting in trouble and losing your rank and all of that. Was it worth it to go meet your daughter for the first time?
Of course. I wouldn't have gone.
And
I wouldn't have gone back either. I'm her father, and she's a great girl.
And it's a special Father's Day weekend for Bob McAvoy, who would end up meeting his second wife after the war in a chance encounter at Los Angeles's Griffith Park Observatory. The youngest of his children got to visit Washington, D.C. with Bob this year, thanks to Central Valley Honor Flight. And we'll hear from father and son about that experience when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.